I'd like you to think about how you developed your own capacities, things that you think you're pretty good at, or ways that you feel you can share, ways that you do your work, your gifts, if you will. Think about how you developed those in yourself, or worked to develop them. I'd like you to think about who are important role models for you, either people that you knew, or people in history, could have been somebody in history, but people that may have had an influence on you. It might have been something going on at the time. Don't limit yourself to positive influence. And then I'd like you to think a little bit about who was really meaningful for you in your life. People that you're with, or an organization, a group that you're part of, a community that you're part of. And also think about any turning points that you've had. Maybe a death of somebody close to you, a tragic event maybe, that gave you some new insight into your own life. But as you think about that for yourself, what kinds of things come to mind? Let me take some notes, and then let's compare ourselves to kind of what I found out from some of the women that I had a chance to work with. What comes to mind? What are some things that helped you sort of give of your gifts or develop your gifts in your own work?
Having a supervisor that believed in what I could do. I mean, that my first supervisor out of college just really...
Okay.
Yeah, being really supportive and really... clear about what she thought I did well.
So somebody who gave you positive feedback. Mm-hmm.
And criticism as well?
Well, I think at that time, no. Well, I think I got some, but I think just right out of college it was most important. And I just loved that job with a really strong sense of what I could do. And then went on to some other jobs where I had supervisors that I just realized the contrast of a supervisor that really builds you up to feel like you have gifts and compared to a supervisor that makes you feel like you can't do it.
Was it a man or a woman?
The support supervisor was a woman, and so was the supervisor that
did the damage. Yeah. Okay. Sometimes it's something. Excuse me.
Well, my experience was I was already in my 40, but my children were growing. I had a little more time. And I've been working mom, so I didn't have a lot of time to get involved in things. And I had a great desire to get involved in the social issues of the day and some kind of discussion group or something like that. And somebody told me about League of Women Voters. And I was kind of the founding mother in my town. But basically, my own ability, I wanted to have it there, but I didn't especially want to have a leadership role because I didn't think I was qualified for it. Mm-hmm. But when they got nominated committee, we had to get all the board members. I don't know if you know all the league functions. But every other position was filled except president. And I had never been anything in any organization. And they all affirmed me. And they just felt like, oh, yes. And you know, the league does work with a kind of total board responsibility. Mm-hmm. And it was really a beginning of knowing that I had, I don't know how you say it, but I had some abilities that I wanted to have it there, but I really never ever thought that I would have that position.
So you showed up, right?
But then, I mean, today there's some work that needs to be here. But you happened to be there, and it was like
that particular position. There was somebody that said, "I'll be the editor of the newsletter. I'll be the treasurer. I'll be this. I'll be that."
So learn to volunteer early, right?
I didn't know anything by the rest of the year.
Does anybody else have that experience?
Made a mistake of not volunteering early.
And the work just needed to get done? So you found yourself in that position?
Yeah, a lot of times there's a necessity and you're just forced into it.
So just do what's needed, right?
I think something that Flo said that strikes a chord with me too is peer support. Having a group of fellow graduate students or friends who will say, well, you're really good at that. You should do more of that.
I I can identify with that.
And that's one of the things I really miss from being out of school. I was thinking, when you asked about who's been meaningful for you in your life, there were five women who were in seminary together, me and four other friends. And we were very, very close friends, and I felt like I got a lot of support from them. And, you know, and we gave each other a lot of support. And so I miss not having that instant community of women who I really felt.
And maybe having friends.
Yeah.
You know, being in a place where somebody cares about you. Maybe not even, has anybody had that sense that your friends aren't really involved with what you're up to, but they're sort of there for you. And so it's sometimes helpful to have somebody on the outside that you can call up and just say, you'll never believe what's going on with me. Right? So that's somebody you've experienced that?
I had a friend, we were both lay women in the church, and we are both now in seminary, and as of June, both ordained. And we are now in very different locations. But she is still someone who I will call up and say, help me figure this out. You know, and we just have a real, we don't talk real often, but when we do, there's a lot of connection.
So and somebody to help you kind of share problem solving, kind of a strategy.
Yeah. She's very good at that.
What else?
Sometimes it is a crisis that makes you move a certain direction.
Can you think of something?
Well, I went through a divorce 10 years ago, and it was at that point where I really had to figure out. I no longer had the luxury of being a volunteer, so it was to figure out what I really did want to do with the rest of my life, with meaningful work.
Okay, so it really pushed you on meaningful work. More and more, you know, this notion of meaningful work, and it comes in a lot. And last week in some of the sessions, we talked a lot about meaningful work. And I'm more and more, because some of my colleagues are from all over the world, but also in communities that I work in, I'm so aware that a lot of women don't have the opportunity to choose meaningful work. I mean, a lot of their work is out of necessity. Their meaningful work are their children or their community or some other things, but when they think of their work, they do what's necessary in order to sometimes just survive.
Yeah. One of the things that's intriguing to me about that dichotomization of what's needed and what's meaningful is looking at particularly some women like my mother and others in her generation, she's just reaching retirement age, who kind of did what was needed and what was available. But who were able to do that in a way that was meaningful, that responding to need gave something meaning. And I know there are people for whom that wasn't the case, but at least for my mom, that didn't breed hostility or anger. It was, well, this is what's needed, this is what's available to me, this is how I can use what I've got to focus on the opportunity rather than the limitation. I don't think that's a conscious decision in her case.
But being able to do that kind of transformation in herself.
Well, yeah, transformation suggests that she once saw it a different way. And I don't think that's the case.
It was always like that.
Yeah.
She was always able to make that kind of an alignment.
Yeah.
I was going to talk a little bit about that, too. I think, for me, home was an incredible support system. I grew up in rural Nebraska, where side by side, men and women worked together on the farms or in small businesses, grocery stores, and all that. And that is that has probably been my most powerful model of work that needs to be done, and you do it side by side, and valuing the work of women and men. And that's something that I'm hoping I'm doing my own home.
So it was a tremendous resource for you.
Oh, yeah. I feel like my mother really mentored me and things that I'm using in life. Because side by side, she taught me how to do stuff. Because side by side, you know, she'd work with Dad.
Carol, you were going to say something earlier. You were going to say something? Did you have something to say earlier?
That's my mother.
She's wonderful.
I had the opposite experience. If I think back, it was actually my home situation that maybe drove me to prove my father wrong, because women were nothing. I mean, women were in their place. They didn't work outside the home. Why would you want to go to college? You're just going to get married anyhow. That type of an attitude. And I look back, and I mean, that drove me. Unfortunately, probably for his approval, which I'll never ever have, but it did drive me to really do well. As I look back, I didn't know it at the time. To prove him wrong.
It's one of the things that we found in some of the interviews that we had and that women continue to say is that I used to think, and have any of you been part of a mentoring program to sort of mentor or support other women who have? Mm-hmm. A lot of organizations, it's popular to have mentoring programs. Mm-hmm. What we found in a lot of the women that we talked to is that mentors don't have to be only sort of positive role models. That a lot of us learn a lot from negative role models. So, for example, a chemically dependent parent. Just as we've got two, one home is sort of, your mom was a positive mentor, but then also your home was, there was this negative role model of women can't do certain things. And so it became a learning form for you. Sometimes I think it's a little bit more difficult to take those negative things and turn and then say, what can I do in my own life to kind of change it? But it's interesting that I think a lot of women have said they've had mentors. Now, a lot of the women that we talked to, when we asked them more about their own personal histories, it was not what I call a wishy-washy mentor. It was somebody that was really powerful, very strong either one way or the other, in the extremes almost, rather than sort of middle of the road. So that a gift to work with somebody who sort of has that kind of impression, lasting impression, and leaves sort of places a lesson in your own life. Other thoughts about kind of how you've developed your own gifts or your capacities or tried to work with other women in developing theirs?
The pastor in my church when I was growing up and I was in high school, was the associate pastor, and I guess I had a vague idea that there were some women who were pastors, but I never had seen one. And he said to me, you know, you should think about going to seminary. Mm-hmm. And he kind of planted a seed that I kind of was like, yeah, right. I mean, I didn't come from a churched family. I never in a million years thought that I would be a pastor. But his little encouragement of, you know, I think you'd be good at this, you know, and, you know, here's a couple reasons why. And so I feel like, you know, somebody who from the outside looked at me and said, you know, I see these gifts that you have. And then, you know, like what you were saying, you know, sometimes it makes an impression you don't even know what impression it makes. But I felt like he kind of gave me permission as a woman to do something like that I never had really thought of doing as a woman. You know what I mean?
Just to be told I think you'd be good at something.
And it was in particular a job, a position or a role that I never had seen a woman do before. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess maybe I thought that you could do it, but I just never, it may be like, you know, you should be an astronaut. You know, I mean, that was about as realistic as it seemed to me.
Right. Well, let me tell you some things that I learned through the stories of the women. And what we did was we asked them to tell, we asked them the same questions. And we asked them not what's about the leadership of women, but we asked them very detailed questions on their own personal histories. And then we looked at all of those histories and tried to look for some common threads that may be helpful for other women or other people who are trying to help women use their capacities better.
How did you find these women?
We selected them, and they weren't randomly selected. They were women that other people had said they felt they had been successful and making a difference, doing some work. We wanted a wide range of ages. We wanted a wide range. We wanted a variety of sort of different kind, doing their work in different settings. So both the public sector, the private sector, and the community sector, both for pay and not pay. Race, we wanted all races represented in the community. So we recruited for diversity, if you will, but across all of those. And then wanted to say, out of those stories then, were there some common themes that might be helpful to give us some insights as we worked with other women and women's groups? And at the time, we were planning to put together a 5-year series of programs for women in our center. And so that's what we did as preparation for that. But there were some themes that came through, and one theme, one big theme that they all said was you have to follow your passions and you have to be focused. That you have to do something that, work around something that you care about. That you will do your leadership work around something that you care about. And so then part of the discipline that we need to learn is to find ways to help ourselves get focused around things that are meaningful to us. Now this is not unusual to the leadership literature. The things that they said specifically was then in terms of being focused, follow your dreams. Some of them had very active dream lives and were very good at sort of listening to that. Another thing is in order to be focused, a lot of them spent a lot of time learning and trying to figure out what was going on. So that was part of the means to getting focused. And so some women who decide to take time out in their lives to really work on sort of learning something or getting focused, that's part of helping bring about their own focus. And some said that even learning gave them confidence. And I'm back in school again trying to learn, and that's certainly helpful for me. I mean, I'm experienced that. That the work that I'm doing in school now is really helping me to get more focused. I'm interested in the nature of how we build learning organizations that help us learn. And we're doing some research on that, and I'm finding that it's helping me really focus in more. Another thing that they said in being focused is that for a lot of them, being focused was survival. I mean, there were points in their life and points in their work where if they weren't focused, they felt like they were gonna not make it in some way. And they had different ways to describe that. So what I would include that, you see, in survival work for some of us, it sometimes becomes being focused. And then they also said another thing that was mentioned very frequently was you have to integrate your career work strategies with a long-term vision. So that particularly in this society where we sort of have a work that we do, that they would distinguish their job at the moment with sort of a longer term vision that helped them have patience so that they didn't get quite so frustrated with things. Has anybody else here had that experience of needing to be intentional about sort of not being too impatient with the job at the moment and trying to keep focused on the longer term thing that you're working on? Does that sound right? A second thing then, in terms of having a clear focus and following your passions, is that they all talked about using their energy and issues of power, not in a negative way, but power meaning how we use our energy. And a lot of us have been taught to wait for permission. But they said, the things that they said then, when they said be powerful, and work on relationships. They said persistence was often mentioned. So they learned how to be persistent with themselves, with others, with things they cared about, a variety of things. But that was a power skill, isn't it? Another thing was you have to learn how to take charge. Now with women, we often talk about empowering others. But a common theme was skills to learn how to take charge. For you, it was taking charge of your life at a time when you're going through a crisis and knowing that you had to take charge of that. You couldn't you know, and particularly women that come out of settings where you've done a lot of caretaking, and your responsibility has to be the caretaker in some ways, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but it's more difficult than to take charge. And so a lot of women said, I really had to work hard on my take charge skills. Another one is, at the same time, they said, you have to continue to empower others. So it's what I call this whole notion of power skills then become not only empowering others, but also the ability to take charge and know the difference, as opposed to one size fits all. Another skill that they mentioned very often under sort of the power skills was the power of negotiation. Of being able to really negotiate rather than sort of say, I want it this way, I want it all or nothing. Or if I don't get it my way, then sort of playing dead. But they said you really have to learn how to negotiate and take risks. And for them, a lot of them, it was taking a risk to think that they could really negotiate a situation. Another thing they mentioned was that you have to work very hard. It goes with the territory. It's not about having inadequate skills. It's just about working hard. Can some of you identify with that? I used to think that I had to work hard because I wasn't very good at it. But they said, no, you always have to work hard. They suggested that a skill also was to be assertive, aggressive, determined, and a fighter. And that was their word. I mean, some of you wouldn't probably choose that metaphor. But of seeing that that's part of the role that's necessary sometime to stand up for what you think is right or the important thing that you're focusing on. And so it's taking a stand. So that would be partnered with taking risks. And the other thing they said is that they felt that it's really important to learn how to pay attention, which is watch what's going on. And sometimes we lose sight of that. We get busy on what we're doing and don't sort of pay attention to the broader scheme of things. But they thought that that was really important. And these are themes that came across all of the interviews that we did, not just one, but those were the common things. The next thing they said is that, and you know, it's interesting that, so some of these things in terms of support would be ways that we empower each other. I mean, I think also matching, getting feedback, somebody suggests something, it's a supportive thing, but ultimately you've got to take a charge of that idea and move forward. So for you to become a pastor, ultimately you had to take charge of that idea and say, well, I'm going to do that for myself, or that's a way that I can make a contribution. But then it's up to you to manage that. But then after that, they said, in addition to kind of knowing what you want, having some good political skills or power skills, energy skill, how you use your energy. Another thing they said is that you have to be organized, that you need some organizational skills. And that the ways that they just think common themes were develop networks. So how many of us have been told and know the importance of networking or being connected with other women, either in organizations we're a part of? Learn from community service was also a thing of organizing your work. It's a way to educate yourself then, a way to learn. A lot of them learned not from school, not from their jobs, not from the thing that they were good at or where they were getting recognition as a positional leader, but a common theme was community service. That they sort of made their mistakes and their training ground, if you will, their way that they organized and developed some of their skills was through community service, which I thought was really interesting and helpful. Now, I don't know if that'll change as more and more women at younger ages get into the paid labor force in the United States with less and less time to do sort of community service that volunteer work. Although a lot of women are still continuing to work and do volunteer work and a variety of other things. Another thing they said is that you need to learn in the organizational skills, you need to learn to resist structure, adapt, and cut red tape and break rules. So, you know, you may not win the favor of the day, but they're saying that was part of their training, is to learn how to do that. So resisting structure, adapting, cutting red tape, and how many of us have to spend time working with bureaucracies? And so I think that that's a gift, people who can help us cut the red tape. Another thing they said is that you need to learn how to serve in a variety of roles, not just one. So that assuming and getting practice in a variety of roles in the organization helps you understand the organization in a way that you wouldn't otherwise. So not just sort of being the chair of, but serving on committees, just a variety of roles. And they mentioned all sorts of things throughout the organization structure. So that some of the other people we talked to, they thought that something that had hurt them was that they were always in the positional roles. They were always kind of seen in their groups as sort of the natural born leader and always serving. And they felt that that held them back a little bit. But experience in serving in diversity roles. Being independent and seeing yourself as not needing to please everybody all the time in terms of how you organize your work. Some of us get into traps where we do things only where we can get positive feedback in the structure of an organization, taking on roles and responsibilities where you know that you can do the job. So they're saying you need to learn how to get yourself independent so you can continue to do your work without getting sort of addicted to approval. The need to be flexible is an organizational skill, and that was mentioned by every single woman that we talked to. And to be goal-oriented. They pride in themselves, and I think that refers back to that having a focus and making sure that activities don't sort of just become activities. It's this notion, a friend of mine calls it, don't start measuring output on the input side. You know, like how many hours it took me to get to Heart Lake today? I mean, did I get to Heart Lake? You see, there's a sort of being that kind of goal focus. So, the themes then again that came up of being focused and your focus having to do something with your passions. Second thing is to skills of seeing how to use your energy and being powerful. Another thing was the ability to organize, organizational skills. Interesting that they didn't mention things like learning how to run a meeting, a variety of those other things, but some of the more macro skills. Some did. But these macro skills of sort of cutting red tape, resisting being flexible. So they're broader, less specific. So there are a lot of other skills, I think, that people are good at and contribute. And those were mentioned by some, but not all. These were themes that were mentioned by all. And then the final thing is that there were a lot of comments about the need to constantly improve yourself and never seeing yourself as having arrived. And so things that they mentioned about improving themselves was spending time to get themselves grounded in what they call being authentic. I mean, I think Holden's a place where a lot of people come to try to sort of ground yourself and to say, what's important to me? Do I walk my talk? And sometimes I think we all need sort of kind of to recenter ourselves. So all the women that we talked to said the importance of centering themselves. Another thing that they thought was important in improving themselves in their own development was having role models. And I mentioned that earlier, both good and bad. So they had role models, but everybody had a role model, but some had good positive ones, and other ones had negative role models that left a lasting impression and really jump-started a lot of their work. I mean, it was kind of saying, I'm gonna live my life in a different way, or I'm gonna make a contribution in a different way. Another thing that they felt was important in terms of improving themselves was seeing their mistakes as, making mistakes as okay. So being tolerant of their own mistakes and having people that they could laugh with. And maybe that for some of you, where you talked about somebody who's supportive or that you could go to or friends that you went through seminary with and talk with, is that they were sort of somebody that you could talk with and say, I messed up here. And they would encourage you to kind of think about that. And it became a resource to you, as opposed to trying to be ashamed of it or afraid if somebody knows, then it's going to be a disaster. Another thing they said is that you have to believe in yourself. That it starts sort of inside yourself. That you have to believe you have something to contribute, as opposed to waiting for somebody else to tell you. I mean, it has to be a match. And I think what you said is somebody told you, but I would be willing to bet that you also had sort of a belief in yourself, that you were looking for something. And so a suggestion came along that was sort of a match. A sense of humor was also mentioned by everybody. As we've got to kind of keep our sense of humor. And then have a voice. And what they meant by, what I mean by having, those are my words, but they all mentioned in terms of improving ourselves. And it's important for women to have a voice. Some had a voice by writing, some had a voice in music, but a way to express yourself and your message. So I think not everybody gives speeches, not everybody does workshops, but some women write. Some women participate in women's organizations and help communicate. I mean, there are a variety of ways to kind of get the message out there. So how does that sound? Are there any surprises there? But you can see where if we took some of those themes then, it gives you some ideas on how we might build some supportive resources with and for women. So we've done a lot of things in our center around some of those themes. Sessions for help women be creative about their organizations and get clear on the focus of their organizations. Sessions to help them build skills so that they can lobby in the legislature about issues that are important to them. That's known as taking charge. But to have some pretty good take charge skills. But we've done a variety of things in those areas. Comments?
Most of what I've heard you identify don't sound gender specific. I mean, the works of Venice and Garfield and Peter Block and lots and lots of people that I'm sure you're intimately familiar with have identified what are the competencies of effective leadership, and that's the arena I work in, and it sounded like 90% of the stuff I live with every day. And so I was curious if you've done an overlay to say, but here are some things that pop out to say this is unique to women in a leadership role, that, you know, somebody of another gender may not need that or may not come to the table with that. What's unique?
Well, we did then some follow-up work. You're right. These are not sort of foreign to the field of leadership, but there are sort of shadow sides. There is some evidence that men and women, on the average, in the United States, and it varies by culture, lead differently and develop their skills differently. For example, women tend to have better empowerment skills than men do. They also have more practice there in the culture. Empowerment skills. So they're often, when others measure or think about their leadership skill or style or trait or whatever, they're stronger on the empowerment side. I can mention a few things if you're interested. Do you want to know some kind of other? It's what I call the strength and the shadow, and I'm a big believer that for any of us, sometimes our strengths become our weaknesses and vice versa. And so it's sort of like I think that we're whole, and it's just kind of sometimes when we get reinforced for something, we become more like that and less like something else. But women tend to lead on issues of special interest that reflect our personal values, But then the shadow side of that, I think, is that sometimes we see things as sort of moral or right as opposed to necessary for the greater good. So we get kind of luxury.
Well, it comes back to the passion again. You know, I have a passion for that. I really embody that, so I'll take that up.
Right, right. But what we found was women tend, when they then give voice to some of their passions, tend to do it on sort of moral grounds as opposed to grounds of necessity. And sometimes people can't hear it as well because it sounds like sort of a lecture as opposed to something that's essential for the community. Mm-hmm. Okay, can you see how it just turns a little bit? Mm-hmm. Another thing is that a lot of women consider themselves and others consider their style, if you will, to be very intuitive. A lot of you see yourself as intuitive. I mean, that you have a healthy sense of intuition. But what our shadow side in that is that we don't do a lot of work then articulating our work in terms of facts and figures and the rational understanding. So I don't do numbers, right? Mm-hmm. And so number crunching is very, very helpful to make a case in a lot of situations. And so we kind of assume that everybody else is intuitive and they'll get it as well. Another thing that women attribute to their style, their leadership style, if you will, is that we see ourselves as kind of creative problem solvers, more on the creative side. But what happens with that sometimes is that we tend to work on shorter-term goals rather than longer-term goals. We're short on that persistence side. So then we take little tasks on and not take on macro tasks. Now part of that may be fear of failure. If you take on a bigger task, particularly on big, hard, complex issues, you're going to fail for 15 or 20 years. If you look at, say, for example, the civil rights legislation in the United States, it was years of failure. We focus our visions on community or the collective. So often women are conditioned to work on sort of the community's work, the family's work. And there are some who say that we aren't good enough at developing our own personal goals. And that could strengthen our work. So oftentimes, this is an area that men more often are much clearer on their own personal goals of what they're working on. Whereas women tend to focus their focus on the community, and then their own personal goals sometimes get lost in that. So it's just it's a way of...
Is that similar to, you know, thinking of organizational cultures that sometimes, well, Carol Gilligan articulated the difference to me, you know, sometimes in organizations where a lot of women are doing the leadership versus men, mm-hmm. I'm experiencing a value or cultural experience of cooperation with the women versus... It seems to be a lot of elbowing and for number one or first place or competition for mm-hmm. competitive values with the particular organization that's led by a man.
So cooperation as opposed to competition.
Yeah, and you know, you're saying that there's a little bit more of that women need to learn some of these other skills, but there's also some real value in knowing which side you're on, you know, when you're in a certain type of organization, too. Mm-hmm.
Well, and you can be for the community and for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes some women do much better if you can also get your own personal goals down. Because sometimes, see, what I think what we do is we muck up our own personal goals with the community's goals because we don't have some boundaries between those two. And so then what's good for me is the community.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've worked with some people on that have done a lot of work on codependency. And codependency is when we can't get straight what's good for us and what's good for somebody else. And we start working somebody else's agenda as our own. So I think it's a boundary thing, and I don't know how to think about that. I just think a lot, and I encourage women to know both have personal goals and sort of community and organizational goals, and it's okay. because some women have been given the message that you shouldn't have both of your own. I mean, have any of you gotten that message? Yeah. So I think that's the shadow side of that, is that we need both. Another thing is that a lot of us see ourselves as good listeners. Do any of you see yourselves as good listeners? The shadow side of that is sometimes when you fail to speak out. Okay, because it becomes your strength of listening. But I think you also have a voice, so you're going to have to work on the expression. So oftentimes I see this in meetings that I'm in when I'm coaching an organization or a group, and it's a mixed group. Oftentimes a woman will ask a question in the group, like, what do you think of X, Y, or Z? And the group will discuss it for 10 or 15 minutes, and then somebody will summarize what they think or what the group thinks. And the person who does the summarizing, often a male, will be given the credit for the idea by the group. And so sometimes women feel as though, well, I said that 10 minutes ago, and now John's getting credit. But it's the difference between asking a question and making a statement. Let's see, and so oftentimes women will frame their statements in the form of a question. There are lots of exceptions to that. But if you feel that way, you might want to start listening to yourself, because maybe when you're making statements, you're really asking questions to the group. And then when they answer your question, then they have the answer. Another thing is that we're good at building consensus. So you feel that you're pretty good at building a consensus in a group. The shadow side of that can be not advocating your own perspective. Because if you get to be known as sort of the consensus builder, then when you have an idea that's different from the group, it's like you don't see yourself as kind of the troublemaker, the unique one that brings the unique perspective to the table. That can be difficult sometimes. I think that some of us feel that we're pretty hardworking. The shadow side of that, I think, is that sometimes that hard work turns into real control and the inability to have fun. So sometimes we work hard so that we sort of maintain our control. And because maybe for some reason the cultures that we're in, we're not supposed to have control, so we have to work at it more deceptively. Another thing is that we are dependable and competent. We see ourselves that way. The shadow side of that is that we're afraid of making mistakes and taking risks. So you can see if we start getting a reputation for being real dependable and real competent, then that for some women it's really difficult to sort of mess that up. That you're the only one they can rely on. And so you don't want to sort of turn a corner and go another way. And that notion that I mentioned earlier is that a lot of us see ourselves as sort of empowers of others. And then it's more difficult to sort of take charge. That's an obvious one, a gender difference between men and women collectively. Again, there's a lot of exceptions to these things. I think another thing that we do in terms of the way we organize things is that we are fantastic at balancing a variety of responsibilities. Part of that comes from our work in our families, and you know, we get a lot of training, I think, to kind of juggle a lot of balls. But what the shadow side of that is trying to be all things to all people and sort of being superwomen and then starting to burn out and not taking time for ourselves. And guys can get into that as well.
Yeah,
absolutely. But this notion of superwomen, particularly with trying to work full time and raise children and assume more family responsibilities and not letting go of community commitments and volunteering and a variety of other things, work in the church. So it's not just in the workplace, but a lot of women are really challenged by trying to find some way to bring all their activities into harmony. And sometimes it's not just an organizational thing, it's about how we see ourselves. And then that we work to benefit people rather than organizations. Do some of you feel that way? That your real work is about being of service to other people, not a sort of the organization. And I think that we need to do both. And men are much better building institutions. Historically, they've built a lot more institutions because women are there, and so that becomes part of our history. But I think then that we also know that the institutions can be really important too. And some of you have been institution makers for other women, and I think that's really helpful as well. Then I think another thing that we often, a strength that we see ourselves is that we're often, some of us are asked to serve in places where there aren't a lot of women, and so we're asked to bring the perspective of women. I don't know, as a woman pastor, I would think that you're probably asked to serve on in a variety of capacities because we want to make sure that we know what a woman is. The shadow side of that is that sometimes it's hard then to recognize the diversity of women. Because people start then to generalize off of that. And then we, another thing I think is that a lot of us have learned to take a lot of pride in getting things done right. And what happens then is I think that we get so caught up in getting stuff done right that we become either perfectionistic or that we fail to help others learn how to do the job and make their own mistakes. So I love to tell my husband that, you know, here, I'll do it myself. You know, if the cleaning's not getting done right, or the cooking's not getting done right, or something that we feel that there's a tendency to try to get caught up in the task at hand rather than sort of helping somebody else to come along and try it out and make their mistakes. So those are kind of shadow sides, I think, that some of the women in their stories would talk about, is that, you know, they thought that just when things were getting good, there was that other side of it, that their strengths also couldn't be challenging to them. A lot of the women that we talked with talked about the challenges of being superwomen, getting a lot of attention, doing things well, particularly when you're positional, and then their high expectations about kind of what you can and can't do. So maybe easy does it for each of us. I think that clearly we can help each other. Guys can help us. I mean, you know, I'm not just saying for women. But I do think that sometimes when you look at the culture of women, women's leadership has some unique challenges just because of the cultural context that some of us have lived and worked in. So I hope this gave you a few ideas about your own leadership, but also about women that you're working with and trying to help them share their gifts a little bit more easily. So thank you for coming.
Thank you, Sharon.